Hey everyone, this is John and this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet, episode 52, the official show for February 2015, which means we're going to be talking about some news, new releases, and preview games coming out in the month of March. Even though I am the only voice you're hearing right now, I am not going solo for another show. A good friend of the show, Jody, and frequent contributor, joined me for this official show, but I lost the first minute and a half or so of audio, so I lost his intro, and I lost the first couple of seconds of the first news story, which is that Rodea the Sky Soldier has been confirmed for coming to the Wii, Wii U, and 3DS in North America. So when we jump over to the regular show really quick, it'll basically be Jody in the middle of his thoughts on Rodea coming to North America. So I am going to cut over to that right after this little musical jime.
It looks really good. I mean, I like the story that the story for the game looks pretty interesting. I don't know a ton about it, but I just remember skimming the synopsis and things like that. The combat looks fun. The graphics look colorful. You know, it'll definitely be a Wii U purchase for me. There were some rumors about, I know with the Japanese release, about cross buy possible. Rumor at this point, but you know how they said that if you get it on but it had to be the digital copy on the Wii U, that they're, you know, get the 3DS version for free. But that's a rumor at this point. Nothing confirmed for, you know, especially for North America. But that would be cool.
Yeah. When I watch gameplay of the game, I get a really strong Knights vibe. Do you get the same?
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, Knights into Dreams. I do get that. Sort of like, I mean, for some reason, you know, it at least the gameplay reminded me of Knights mixed with, like, Panzer Dragoon on, like, Sega Saturn. Like, something about those two games, like, it just seemed like a hybrid. And that's just two games, you know, that I can just, you know, at first glance, it seems like. But, the art style seems like Skies of Arcadia. It's like, you know, it just, like, kind of screams Sega. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's a power pack combination right there.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the next news story. The Gold Mario Amiibo did get confirmed as existing, and it's going to be a Walmart exclusive, which I guess caused maybe a little bit of a kerfuffle, a little bit of a hubbub, because, of course, people on the internet, surprise, surprise, got upset about something. Jody, you collect Amiibos, yes?
Sort of. I have like 18 or 20 Amiibos right now, so I don't go out of the way to get them all. You know, I don't have a lot of the rares, but you know, the reason I have as many as I do is because Toys R Us, they had a 3 for $25 and a 3 for $30 deal at two different points, and I kind of snatched up all the commons, but I definitely do have a lot of them. You know, I've got I'm waiting for Shulk to come in the mail, and you know, a few things like that. I try to pre-order them when I can, but I don't wait in line or camp out for an
Amiibo. Right. Yeah. I don't know. To me, I don't really collect them either. I just recently got a Toon Link, who's not really a rare or anything.
That
brings my collection up to three. I've got Toon Link, and I've got Yoshi, and I've got Samus. Yeah. So I just kind of grab the characters I like. I mean, it'd be cool to get an Ike and a Shulk at some point, because I like those characters.
Yeah, those are very rare, especially Shulk.
Oh, yeah. And the last time I checked Amazon, people were selling them for like 60, 70, 80 bucks.
Yeah. So that's not even like as much as they were going for. Like, Shulk is a GameStop exclusive, so
yeah.
Of course, when other sites hit it, you know, it's going to be a price hike. But, you know, they confirmed the, like, and it's probably old news, but this year they're coming out with the card mm-hmm. version of Amiibo, and that's cool for people that just want to, you know, have them and maybe more portable. I mean, I definitely like to have the figures more, but the cards take up, you know, considerably less space. You know, I have, you know, the Kid Icarus cards. I have like 300 of those in my DS case, you know, from the Kid Icarus. It's because, I mean, they, I got some with the sort of the limited collector's edition of Kid Icarus. I got some with that, Club Nintendo had where you can, you know, they had where When you register the game, you get some. They added that twice, and they had where you could spend money and get some, spend coins and get some at one time. But I ended up getting like four different packs from Club Nintendo, and then I ordered some off their site. So I tried to, I don't know how many there were total, but that's a whole different topic. But they're pretty neat. But yeah, I'll probably, honestly, if they become pretty common, the card amiibos, I'll probably get, and within price range, the ones that I really want. Like, I'm not gonna rebuy anything, but I'll get like Ike or Mega Man ones that I didn't get a chance to grab the actual figure for.
So you could do some Smash training with them?
Pretty much, yeah.
See, I kind of like the idea of the cards because it is a much smaller footprint. And to me, when I think about like amiibo cards for the Smash characters or just Nintendo characters in general, I have flashback to collecting Pokemon cards and have like a full binder full of all like the original 151 Pokemon cards. So, and that was actually something that I really enjoyed as a kid, is I never really played the Pokemon trading card game more than just collecting them.
Yeah, like still play it.
it was kind of, it felt a lot like filling out my own little Pokedex, and doing that kind of thing with amiibo with the cards would be kind of cool.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
But back to the gold amiibo being a Walmart exclusive, I don't really go out of my way to get these things, so it doesn't bother me. I can understand why the huge collectors would be upset, because anytime they do an exclusive like this, it just makes them harder to get.
Yeah.
So, I can feel their pain, but, I mean, the alternative is, you already have a Mario, so do you really need another one?
No, not me. And I don't. And amiibos aren't the only. I mean, like Skylanders and Disney. Well, especially Skyland, Disney Infinity is not so much, but they did do that with the limited. But there's GameStop exclusive Disney Infinity and Walmart figures, and or Disney Infinity and Skylanders. There's GameStop exclusive, Walmart exclusive, Best Buy exclusive. Mm-hmm. So amiibos aren't the first to go through this kind of process. It's just they're more rare. They don't make as many of those. But the same way, I didn't go rebuy any. I didn't buy any legendary Skylanders. I didn't buy. I bought a Crystal Disney Infinity figure because I didn't own the character, and that was the only way to get it. That's the only way I could find it. But I'm not going to rebuy any amiibo. No way at all. I don't. I train them in Smash Brothers. If it comes to a point where I want to use it in Mario Party, since you have to wipe the data, I'll wipe it if I have to. I mean, it takes literally no time at all. And with Smash too, you can back all the moveset, things like that. You can back that up. And then, you have to re-level them, but you can, all the stuff you feed them, like their items and data, you'll still have it, so you can just feed it right back to them, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, and if you throw your, like, one amiibo that you erased in there with a bunch of your other, level 50 amiibos, they'll level up pretty darn quick.
Like 30 minutes, yeah, 30 minutes, I think, so.
Yeah, if you really need to have them up at level 50.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny that over the past several months, there's this whole like collection culture around Nintendo stuff. You see it with like the new 3DS XLs, like that even the non-special edition colors sold out really quickly. And I think a lot of it just has to do with people anticipating rarity of things and that kind of fueling the demand to want to buy it up quickly. Maybe it would still be scarce if people weren't as caught up in it. But I think that if everyone just like took a deep breath, calmed down for a minute, I don't think any amiibos are going to disappear. Like the gold one, I can see like maybe only lasting a little while and just being a limited run. But like the really rare ones, Marth, Ike, Wii Fit Trainer, I think like GameStop even recently, like the SKUs reappeared, which is leading, like, and the SKUs disappearing led people to believe that they were not going to be done again. And I just think it's absolutely absurd to have things sell as well as amiibo and then just have Nintendo not make any more. I think that's ridiculous. Yeah.
The only one that they've confirmed they stopped production of was Little Mac, but as far as that, they haven't. I haven't seen any other confirmations about them cutting out any other ones, and I don't know why they did for Little Mac, but he was incredibly hard to find. It's I don't know. I mean, it's all about price hacking. Same way they do with limited editions and the very, very limited edition Majora's Mask, collector's edition, which I didn't even get my hands on. I have the Majora's Mask new 3DS, and I have the GameCube adapter for Wii U, but I didn't get my hands on that, so.
Yeah, the Majora's Mask special edition game with the Skull Kid figure. I actually went to Target the day that Majora's Mask came out back on the 13th, and I was just picking up the standard edition, which of course they had in full stock. But the guy who was working the counter there in the game section said that there were people lined up for the special edition, and like that kind of thing. Like, I don't remember the last time I heard so much about people lining up for Nintendo products. Well, I take that back. I do remember the last time. It was back when the Wii was first yeah. out, and people would be lining up in front of stores to get the thing. So I don't see really strong evidence of Nintendo doing anything like malicious or kind of unethical to sort of fuel this sort of collector culture, but it's definitely benefiting them. People are getting excited about their products.
Correct. Yeah. So like I said, that, you know, and then they make the stuff that really, the stuff that matters, like the games, you know, they make plenty of supply with it, but, it seems like they're cutting back on something. Like they stopped, you know, the Ocarina of Time, the retail version, they stopped making that, but I mean, it's available in eShop, and, you know, so that kind of hacked the price up a little bit. They did the same with, before the Wii, you know, life was over, Majora's Mask Metroid Prime Trilogy, the price before the Wii was over, the price hacked up hardcore with that, and I guess close to the end of the cycle, they did the same with Xenoblade, and that's why the prices were still so high even now, you know. Metroid Prime's going down a little bit, I guess, you know, because the eShop release, but it's still like $60 at GameStop.
Yeah, it's kind of weird sometimes what they choose to stop printing. Like, I can completely understand Xenoblade. They probably didn't have very high expectations for that game.
Yeah.
But a game Ocarina of Time 3D, that's mm-hmm. really weird that they stopped making carts for that.
Yeah, Xenoblade, like you said, it was a GameStop exclusive too, so that was kind of limited to begin with. But at the same time, you know, I mean, I walked in there and, you know, I had it pre-ordered. I went in there and mm-hmm. I had someone. I mean, I don't know how easy or how hard it was to get it first, but I had someone upset that I walked out with it. They're like, "How'd you get that?" And I was like, "I pre-ordered it." And they're like, "I did too, but they didn't have my copy." And I was like, "What?" You know, and then they apparently the kid didn't pre-order it or something. I don't know, but so I don't know how. It didn't seem like that game was hard to find at first, but like you said, it's just kind of it's nuts. I mean, I don't get who's doing it. Nintendo's behind it, or who. I mean, I know they would have to have some say in it, but, you know, it is what it is.
So let's move on to this news about Sega. Sega is cutting 300 jobs as it restructures its business. They are moving to focus more on mobile and online PC games. So I think the big reaction around this one, and I didn't read the full press release, so maybe I'm not getting certain information, but I think the big reaction that a lot of people had around this one was like Sega's not making console or handheld games anymore. And I don't think they explicitly said that. It's just they're shifting their focus more into mobile and PC games, which is still a shame. We might not see that much from Sega in the future, but I don't. Like, I didn't get out of it that they're completely out of the...
No, definitely not. You know, I read the press release, and you know, from what I got is the reason I think, and I'm no you know, business expert or anything like that, but the reason I think that they're shifting their focus is because they're good with handheld games, and they're good with console games. You know, the games they make, the games they help publish and put out, make money there, and it seems like that's kind of like, it's kind of like a assembly line. It just goes and goes and goes. And I feel like the little bit like where they've you know, ported out all their, you know, big, like, you know, Super Monkey Ball and all the Sonic games to iPhone and Android, you know, those are big money makers. And you know, some of the online PC games, one in particular, I can't think of the name of it, but it'll never come to me, but, you know, some of their online games, I think that's just a largely untapped market for them. You know, even though they've been one of the lead developers when the iPhone came out with games, you know, going to it and helping the App Store grow, but I think that's just an easy profit. You know, it's an easy for a profit. I mean, some of the games they release, it's easy to port, easy to make, $1 for the games, you know, and they sell millions and millions of the other games. You know, there's no overhead. I mean, there's no nothing to do. You know, they don't have to they don't have to publish it, and it's just right there. It's all digital. Same for online, you know, it's just like less publishing, more just developing and letting go. But they're definitely still going to make console games. You know, they'll never get away from that. Console games and handheld games and things like that, they're just going to focus more on tapping into that market, it seems like.
Yeah, and even if we didn't get a Sonic game every year, you know, maybe that wouldn't be such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like maybe if they took a little bit more time in between Sonic games, then
Boom was kind of Boom. I mean, Boom 3DS was okay. Boom on Wii was I thought was garbage. Sonic Generation was probably. I mean, I loved Sonic Colors and Sonic 4, but Sonic and Lost World, but Sonic Generation was my favorite Sonic game since Adventure 1 and 2. Mm. Like I thought they did a really good job with Generations. I would love to see that on it came to 3DS, but I'd love to see something like that, either Generations 2 or something, something similar to that style on the Wii U.
Yep. So let's move on to some other stuff. There were a few rumors that kind of swirled around over the past month. One was that Twilight Princess could be the next Zelda game to be remade, and there's the possibility that it might end up on the new 3DS. Jody, what do you think? Are you good on Zelda remakes for a little while, or would you be excited to see Twilight Princess come around in 2016?
No, I would definitely play it if it came out. You know, I think it's, I saw the rumor too, and it only make at this point it only makes sense because it's the next one. But, it's way too soon. I mean, it's been a little while, but I mean, Twilight Princess isn't that old. You know, it's like two home Zeldas back, so it's not that old. But I feel like you said, I mean, with Xenoblade coming to the new 3DS and apparently running excellent, I feel like that, but Xenoblade does tap the pretty much all the power of the new 3DS, but so it did the same for the Wii. But I think that with Twilight Princess being a Wii launch console, I think that a game that they won on the Wii, I think it would. I mean, it could probably possibly run on a regular 3DS, but definitely on the new 3DS. But I would get it. If it came out late this year or next year, I would definitely get it. I think it's just too soon. But, I mean, right now, it's like if it came out tomorrow, I'd probably still get it. But it's like I wouldn't have time to fit it into, my gaming schedule. But I think by the time it comes out, when and if it does, then it, I guess we'll have a – we'll be singing a different tune at that time. We'll be excited for it. It'll feel a lot longer, instead of feeling like, it's just 2 years ago, almost, when Twilight Princess came out. I know it was longer, but instead of feeling like that, I guess when the game actually comes out, if it does, it'll feel like a lot longer gap, if that makes sense. So
I'm totally with you that if it did end up getting remade, I would totally buy it and thank Nintendo for doing it. But it definitely feels like we're getting a lot of Zelda really quick. And I don't think that it would be this year if they are still planning on delivering on their promise of having Zelda Wii U out this year. We're getting a lot of Zelda recently, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if they would be able to make something like Twilight Princess happen that quick, because it's not like going from Ocarina of Time to Majora's Mask, where they're reusing a lot of the same assets.
Yeah, and they started on Majora, the day after they published, they published it, they started on it, so it took three years to make.
Yeah.
I expect something like that with Twilight if they do. We had two Zelda remakes. I mean, a lot of people say, A Link Between Worlds, Link Between Worlds wasn't a remake. It was a new game set in the same universe, so which is awesome. But, so we've had two Zelda remakes, and of course ports over the years and things like that. But these are two remakes. But I don't know. I think there's other games they could do, before Twilight Princess, maybe some type of HD texture for like for Link's Awakening, or even Link to the Past, or the original, original two, something like that, and some kind of 1080p, 60 frames a second, like beautiful, what's that game? Can't think of it, but something, just like really, 2015 style graphics. I mean, and just for fun, people would be like, oh, I prefer the original, but at the same time, it's like, who cares? We have the option of having both, and kind of like with some games where what's it called? Mighty Switch Force. You hit the select button and you can switch between two graphic styles. That would be really cool.
Yep. So, in other rumors, there's a rumored 2.5D Metroid game that was pitched to Nintendo that Nintendo denied. This was pitched for the 3DS, and one of the partial reasons that they denied the pitch was the mixed responses to Other M. And if this rumor is true, that's really sad. Because, Other M had mixed responses, but I think anyone that hates Other M just because of the story is really way off base. The gameplay in Other M was really fun. It was really creative. It was a really nice take on the Metroid formula. And I think it's an underrated game because people got so hung up on what they didn't like about the story and the characters.
Yeah. I thought, I was thinking that the cancellation of that was not the reason, but the cancellation of that, I thought that was announced by them. I thought that was a fact, but I could be wrong.
But that could be the case. Yeah.
But definitely the reasoning. But I didn't read a solid reasoning behind it, so that's news to me what you said, and I could be wrong too. But at the same time, I agree 100%. I loved Other M. I admit that at times Samus's voice got a little bit under my skin, but not that bad. I could see why it got under more people. Why it would bother some people, but the gameplay was amazing. Mm-hmm. The 2D, 3D style. I mean, everything, like you said, 2.5D. I mean, everything about the game. It was just fun. It felt great. I'd love to see another Metroid like that.
And the combat was really fun because it was a lot more
Ninja Gaiden.
Because Team Ninja. But much more. And like the finishing moves, when you were able to put your gun into the mouth of a space pirate and blow their heads off. Really satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually surprised how well the switching into first person for the missiles worked. I was expecting it to be kind of cumbersome, but they implemented it in really smart ways. Like even during boss fights, you had to be pretty good at it to pull it off perfectly. But you could say that about most mechanics in most games. So I think that, as long as we're on this Other M tangent, I'll just reiterate that, it's a really good game. And if someone who's listening has played it once and hated it, I'd say give it a second chance and just really focus on how they're able to mix up the platforming Metroid formula and how they're able to mix up the combat in new ways, because they really did some cool things. And the last rumor, and this is one that a lot of people have been talking about over the past couple of weeks, but the rumor is, and this was published in the Wall Street Journal, Netflix and Nintendo may possibly be teaming up and working on a Legend of Zelda series. So I'm going to open the floor to you, Jody, on this one. What is your level of excitement for something like this possibly happening?
Yeah, like I said, I know this is sort of a rumor at the same time. I mean, Netflix had posted a press release about it, but Nintendo is completely silent on the matter. They didn't confirm or deny it or anything like that. So it's kind of like, why, Netflix is like, hey, we're doing this, and Nintendo's like, just being silent. So, maybe they're leaving it, but I'm happy with it. I'm super excited to see what they do, how they do it. There's so many fan made, Legend of Zelda videos on YouTube and things like that are really cool to watch. I mean, there's some really crappy ones, but there's, some really good ones out there. So, and I think that, this Legend of Zelda, if they do it right, and the budget's right and everything like that, I think they could really do it well. I don't want to see some half-assed, Triforce appearing on, you know, someone's, you know, hand. I don't want to see, you know, the sword, you know, the Master Sword, you know, you have to, like, you know, there's so many ways they could really mess it up with the animation and things like that, but or even the CGI, but you know, yeah. As long as they do it right, which I feel like they, you know, Nintendo especially would, you know, I feel like it'd be pretty sweet, you know. I mean, I'm sure it might be something like Orange is the New Black, where they post an entire season, you know, mm-hmm. at once on Netflix, which would be, which would be preferred to me, but I'd be okay with one a week as well, or however long.
Yeah, typically they do the whole season, which would be great, because I really like to binge watch those types of shows. But yeah. I think what most people are trepidatious about is that traditionally Link doesn't talk, and they're thinking, well, if Link is in the series, you know, he's going to have to talk, he's going to have to say something. And I would actually like to see them try something really bold, and that is to not have Link talk. And there are ways that you could get away with doing that. The thing that comes to my mind the quickest is to have Link almost totally removed from every other character in the game. So, like, in like a Game of Thrones style fashion, there's like intrigue and stuff going on, and then Link is totally alone in a separate part of the world, and he's like your action beats. So whenever you need to have like something die, you go to Link and have him like kicking ass. And since there's no one around for him to talk to, he doesn't have to do any talking.
Yeah.
I think go ahead, you go first.
Oh, no, that's definitely a good idea. And I even thought the possibility of, and it would, you know, make people riot in the streets, but how would this be without Link, you know, or sure. very, very minimal Link, you know, just something set in the Legend of Zelda world. I mean, Link's name's not in the title, so they can get away with it. You know, if Zelda wasn't a part of it, that'd be one thing, mm-hmm. but, you know, I mean, they could do something else for all we know. They could be, you know, they could be original, you know, something that doesn't have to be in the Hyrule, you know, the Hyrule, you know, companion.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to be canon. It just can, you know, it just has to be. You know, I think they could just make up their own story and, you know, make up their own hero who might meet Link every now and then, might fight alongside Link, you know, Silent Link. And, but.
Yeah,
as long as he doesn't end up talking like CGI Link, you know, or you know CDI Link, then I think it'll be fine.
Right, and see, I think the easy thing to do would just to be have Link in there and have him be like a regular character that talks like everyone else. And I don't, and that could be good. I'm not saying that just having that in there would just be categorically bad, but it would be cool to see them try something that would be hard, like not having Link in there or having him in there but not talking, that kind of thing. Yeah. And mm-hmm. doing that sort of really hard writing, and if it's done really well, it makes it even better. And you know, even if it doesn't turn out so great, I would still appreciate the fact that they were trying to do something hard and not just taking the easy way out.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, should we move into talking about some games here?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Alright, so you have been playing some Monster Hunter, which came out on the 3DS and new 3DS XL on February 13th, which was a pretty huge day for Nintendo. But what are you thinking of Monster Hunter so far?
definitely, you know, I feel like, you know, and I've played Monster Hunter since the very first one, you know, so, you know, I got the, you know, I'm rocking the Monster Hunter, the new 3DS, the Monster Hunter, you know, that's the one I chose, and the wife uses the Majora's Mask one, but
nice.
the game's amazing, you know, it really is for new players, especially for new players. I feel like, you know, and I have a lot of friends who just started playing Monster Hunter and picked it up without a problem. You know, I have friends that I had to sit there and teach how to play Monster Hunter 3 because of how different it was, and those differences are still part of 4. So I mean, once you really get into it, there's still a lot of training. There's a learning curve once you really get into it, but the game's amazing. I mean, it really is. You know, compared to the originals, compared to being a brand new game, I mean, there's so many new elements. You know, to Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. I mean, there's the you know, in the past, all the Monster Hunter games, you fight, you know, all the monsters, all the, you know, the big hunts on the same planes. So you stand right in front of them, you hit them. But this one, there's like, you can stay on top of a cliff, and if let's say you're fighting, you know, a dragon like a Wyvern or the Wrath, you know, Rathalos or something like that, you know, and they're big enough, and let's say, like, you know, you and I are playing, you can be at the base of the cliff attacking them. I can be standing on top shooting arrows down at them or hitting them with my sword up top. That's something that's never been, you know, available in a Monster Hunter game till now, is that different level of combat, you know, the actual level of combat. And, you know, the game's typically, you know, fundamentally the same as all the other Monster Hunters. You start out in a town, there's a little story, you know, you've got your main village story, and then you have your, you know, where you go on to the multiplayer aspect of it, and you only rank up by playing the multiplayer aspect of it, which can be played offline as well, but still, the hunts are harder, you know, all the quests are harder, and you know... But it's more difficult that way. But, you know, you have that, you know, before every hunt, you have, you know, you go in, you combine, you eat, you know, eat food, you have your chest where you, you know, you deposit your items and withdraw your items and craft, you know, make potions and make, you know, whetstones and things that are not, you know, get your whetstones or make all kinds of different items. You know, you have your blacksmith who makes armor and makes your weapons and upgrades your armor and your weapons, you know, as you have the items that you get from all your hunts. You know, you have the, you know, all the different quests you can do to, you know, expand the cook so they can make better food for you, and, you know, the you know, one of the what's it called, the not traveling salesmen, but they send ships out and collect resources for you, and then they bring back more items you can buy, you know, across, you know, overseas, and just things like that. Street pass, you know, when you street pass with somebody, it trades guild cards, and, you know, your Monster Hunter character, you know, your player would pop into my game in my town, and, you know, and you know, from street pass and even online, you know, downloading guild cards from your online friends, and I can send you out kind of like Dragon Quest IX on a quest. So if your character's staying in my town, you know, as a copy, not playing multiplayer, you know, I can be like, hey, John, you know, go hunt Rathalos, you know, take 3 guys with you, and if you win, you know, you'll come back, you'll bring me items, and you'll bring me money, and then if you die, then I have to pay to heal, you know, pay, repair your stuff. And
that's actually really cool. Do they kind of stay with you permanently until you get another street pass from that person?
Yeah, well, they pop in your town, and I'm not sure about this one, but Monster Hunter 3, you had you could have, you know, I think you could have it maybe, you know, I never saw more than 4 people in my town, but they would alternate. So if I sent, you know, of course I had like 100 different people. So if I sent you out on a quest, the next time it will pop up someone else, and you would eventually come back. You know, you would always come back, but it would just alternate out how many people. I'm not sure how many can you know, be in this game, but they would just keep coming back over and over. And the more I sync with you, you know, your higher rank player would rank up. So if I sync with you at, you know, Hunter rank 1, and then I sync with you again at G level, you know, you would obviously, you know, do quests better for me. But yeah, it's like you said, they do come back, and you can keep sending them out, and that's completely separate. I mean, I could send everybody, you know, all my Street Pass, you know, buddies out, and then I can just go do 1,000 quests and come back, and they're all sitting there waiting for me when I come back, and they, you know, and the items they get are random. I mean, they're not, you know, you can't specify that, but you can tell them, you know, they'll bring up a hunt and you say, okay, you know, go hunt the Rathalos, go, you know, go hunt Great Jaggy or something like that, and they come back, and if they're successful, you know, you get the items from them. If not, then you have to, like, pay a fee to their doctor bill probably, but it's really cool. Like, the game itself, like I've mentioned, I mean, it's just, if you've never played Monster Hunter, it's definitely worth it. It's really simple. I turned off the tutorials, but I've seen tutorials from my friend playing it, and they're not insulting, but they're really quick. I mean, they'll tell you what you need to know and things like that. And there's always, you know, like, Capcom does a really, really good job with the videos on the Capcom Unity, you know, website and YouTube page. You know, they'll have, like, intro to Monster Hunter. They have, like, four big videos there. They do with Pro Jared, a YouTuber and you know, former Screw Attack employee. But they do videos with him. And every Monday is Monster Hunter Monday, where they'll get on Twitch and they'll do hunts, and you can join Capcom. You know, if you, they'll open up a room and you can hop in there. And I've actually played with them before on Monster Hunter 3, and they'll play with you and chat with you, things like that. So they do that. They were doing that with Monster Hunter 3 until like a couple weeks ago. Now they're doing it with 4. So it's really cool. But yeah, like I said, it's a great game. I recommend it.
I actually had more questions about the street passing thing. The characters that you get street passing, can you take them, like, as bots on quests with you, or are they just to send out on other quests that you assign to them?
They cannot go with you on your quest. Gotcha. They're only on assigned quests. You can assign them a quest, send them out, but they can't go with you. Pretty much the only people that can go with you can take up the, you know, 4 people with you or 3 other people, but you do have your minions, you know, your cats and your cha-chas and your kayambas, things like that. You have, they can come with you. You know, typically you can have 4 people. So if you play online, you know, I can bring my minion, you can bring yours, but if we play with other people, you know, they count as a character. So,
gotcha.
You know, we all couldn't just bring all of ours, but if me, you, and say my wife played, you know, one of us could bring our character, whichever the one's higher level. I think it randomly picks who has the highest rank one to bring in, but, you know, they automatically stay back, and then when you return, that they rejoin you in town, so they're not upset or anything. And they do the same thing. Your minions, while you hunt, they collect items for you, and you can specify that by changing some of their settings. Especially in 3, you can change the mass of them. So it's like, okay, collect more gold. Okay, look for these items. You know, look for these minerals. Okay, look for these bugs. You know, you can specify the type of items that they get, and then at the end of the quest, when you're in town, you check with them, and they'll give you whatever that is, you know, and you can keep doing that. It's a little bit different in Monster Hunter 4, but that's typically how they work.
All right, and then the other question I had, the pool of quests that you can send them on are, I guess, how do I want to phrase it? Can you send them on a quest that would be too hard for them to finish? Or is it just like you have like quests that you can select from that's within their particular skill range when you street pass them?
Both, actually. So, you know, they typically, when you talk to them, you don't pick a quest. They provide you with a quest. I've seen a couple times where they give you a couple of quests to pick from, but they bring you the quest, and I mean, it's a quest that's already in the game. You know, it's something that they should be capable of doing, but they can fail it. And you have an option. You have basically 1 through 4, maybe 5 stars, but you have an option to where, you know, you can bump the stars up, which raises the difficulty. But it's, you know, they get better loot, and there's always a you know, percentage, like a success percentage. So it's like, you know, you have a 95% chance to succeed, or you have a 50% chance to succeed, you know, which is a really good indication of how well they'll do. But like you said, I mean, they come up to you, they say, hey, I'm going to do a quest. You know, you look at them. A lot of times they have one. Sometimes they'll have multiple. You pick it, select the difficulty, goodbye. You know, they usually come back in one day, which in the game, you know, if you go out in the field and spend a full day-night cycle where you sleep in your bed, that's a day, or if you go and do a hunt or a quest and come back, that's considered a day too. So they'll come back at the end of your quest. Some of them, they take longer than the quest might take 3 days, you know, not real life days, in-game days. And that's just, you know, they go from there, but they do, and they can fail it. I mean, you can put it, sometimes you can, you know, pick 1-star easy difficulty, you know, and they'll come back and they'll still fail, but they definitely, they're capable of completing every quest that they offer.
Nice. All right, so also out on the 3DS on February 13th, we got Ace Combat Assault Horizon Legacy Plus, as well as Ironfall Invasion. Did you play either one of those? I did not.
I didn't even know Ironfall was out yet.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Now I might want to check my 3DS. Let's see. Because I thought that one was
And you're probably right. Let's see. Because I'm Ironfall, I really want. I've not played it yet, so... Ironfall, let's see. Man, I can't believe that slipped past me.
I might be misinformed. That is entirely possible, because now I remember looking at my 3DS eShop earlier today and not seeing that with the releases.
It's a 3DS. It's an eShop only title, right? So it's a...
Right. Is it new 3DS only?
No. It comes to regular 3DS as well. So from what I remember from their last Direct... Ironfall. Yeah, I remember it talking about, I mean, it's the 25th of February already. I don't see an actual release date for it, but I don't remember it being out yet, but like I said, I could be wrong, but.
Yeah, well, I could be wrong as well. I mean, either way, it's, we might as well talk about it a little bit. You're looking forward to it.
Yeah, it looks really good. You know, like I said, I love the way first person shooter games play on the 3DS. You know, I liked from partially the Kid Icarus Over the Top wasn't first person, but Moon Chronicles plays really well, so you know, given that, I'm hyped. Yeah, it looks good. I like the story. It looks really competitive, so you know, I like that. From what I seen in the last Nintendo Direct about it, it kind of hyped me up a little bit, so I'm gonna get it.
All right, yeah, I'm actually on the eShop now. And it is not out yet. Oh, release date tomorrow. Great.
So okay.
By the time this posts, it will be out.
Ah, okay. Perfect. Yeah, I thought that because I'd saved it. What's it called? I mean, I haven't pre-ordered it or anything, but yeah, I've got enough credit on the eShop to get it. I was waiting for it. So
nice.
But like I said, I didn't even realize it'd be tomorrow, honestly. So it kind of slipped past me anyway. So, but yeah, I'll definitely be grabbing that with the credit I have.
All right, and then the other game that we're going to talk about that came out on the 13th is, of course, Majora's Mask 3D. And this is a game that I have a whole lot to say about. So I'm going to try to go slow. And Jody, if there's something you want to talk about, go ahead and cut me off. Because I get really excited about this game. So I might I might just start going off.
Yeah, so,
it's, first off, it's a very different Zelda game, both structurally and tonally, and it's often described by a lot of people as the darkest Zelda game. It has a really ominous narrative setting, because, of course, the world is about to end. The moon is going to crash into the world, and as the main character, you're going to let it happen, basically. The main objective of the game is not to stop the world from being destroyed, although stopping the world from being destroyed will help you with your main objective. Your main objective is just to get the mask back and give it back to the mask salesman. Your primary goal is not to save the world. Aside from the really ominous narrative setting, it has a really great use of color to kind of establish a really dark tone. It has some browns, but it uses a lot of like greens and oranges and purples, and almost really like muted colors too. It's not as super vibrant as, say, Ocarina of Time, even though it does use a lot of the same color palettes. But it has definitely a more toned down like brightness to it, and it definitely shows that a game doesn't have to be a lot of like grays and browns to be dark. It can still use a lot of color, but still be really tonally off-putting. It also has a really great use of music to establish that tone as well. Really dissonant tones and melodies and under-melodies during a lot of the songs that create that sort of dissonance that only further makes it a really uncomfortable tone to the game. Really great visual cues as well. I'm thinking specifically about when the clock is counting down, when a day is about to end, the screen will get smaller. And that was a really clever way to let you know that a day was ending and that the further you get into it, the more dangerous things are getting because you're running out of time. And just like really cool little visual touches like that to make everything seem really bizarre and off kilter. Like when you're talking to the happy mask salesman, there's like a lot of jump cuts where he'll like be in one position and then just kind of flash to another. You won't actually see him move from spot to spot. It'll just become like he's like bowing and like he's got a really angry face, and then all of a sudden he's like got his arms open and he's even smiling at you again. So there's really great visual and music cues that really augment that tone. But there's also this sort of futility to the gameplay that really make it a really dark Zelda title. Because in order to progress in the game, you have to reset everything by playing the Song of Time. So you basically ruin almost everything that you just did. You get to keep a little bit of stuff to keep your progress. But basically, if you beat a dungeon and kind of restore a particular section to balance, then you're, of course, going to run out of time. You have to reset and undo everything you just did. And instead of, you could go back and fix it all again just by skipping to the boss. But basically, you're just moving on to the next section in order to get what you need from there and then reset again. So it has this really sort of unsettling, counterintuitive nature of progressing to where you get a little bit further and then undo a lot of what you just did. And a lot of that is also in the side quests as well. So, and that's one of the really awesome things about Majora's Mask that I really love a lot, is that the structure of the game itself augments the unsettling tone and atmosphere of the game. One of the first things it does is it intentionally throws you off balance with the Deku transformation. So you're, of course, riding through the woods at the beginning of Majora's Mask. You encounter the Skull Kid, takes your horse and your ocarina, transforms you into Deku Kid, and you're stuck like that. And you have to get, you're tasked by the really creepy sales guy to get your ocarina and your mask back in 3 days, and he can cure you. It throws you into this really strange town. You can't leave the town as the Deku Kid. You are stuck in this one town, and the only thing you can do is go around and talk to people to figure out how to find the Skull Kid and how to get to him. So if you're successful, you reset, and you still have to, you can't get the mask back. You only get your ocarina, and then you have to go back to the start by playing the Song of Time and try to find a way to get the mask back again, but you're still stuck on that 3-day cycle. And you know, when the game first came out, and Jody, I'll kick it over to you for a second here. When the game came out, were you already aware of the 3-day cycle, or did you go into it totally blind to that?
What do you mean? Which game? Like originally on the N64?
Right, on the N64.
Yeah, I mean, I knew, I mean, because of the way they advertised it, you know, way back when, they're like, you know, 3 days to beat the game. So, I mean, I definitely knew it was going to be a 3-day cycle. Didn't know how in-depth it was or, you know, about resetting. I mean, I thought that, you know, I figured it was going to be a short game, like you have to rush to beat it. Didn't know you could slow down time or reset time or, you know, anything right. like that. But I did know about the 3-day cycle just because of the way they advertised it. I was really hyped up for it. You know, I followed it and Nintendo Powers and game fans and game pros and all that good stuff. So I was, you know, I was right there at EB Games buying it day one when it came out.
Yeah, I was also fully aware of the 3-day cycle, and then you had to reset and start over before I first played the game, which was a few months after it came out the first time I got to play it. But could you imagine just like being one of the first people to like play the game or play test the game, and then like being a Deku kid going around like, okay, I got this song. I'm going back to the beginning. I'm going to become a human again, and then I'm going to be able to play through the game like a normal Zelda game. But then, like realizing that you only have the 3 days to do it again, and that you have to keep on resetting over and over again, that must have been just a huge surprise to the first people playing it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, definitely. I mean, I was, like I said, I mean, I had the game day one, so I was definitely among the first people playing it. But at the same time, I mean, there wasn't, it was definitely a surprise. It was different. I mean, I was like, all right, 3 days, I tried to play as fast as I could, found out I could reset it and did. And, I mean, there's lots of stuff you can keep, you can deposit your money and things like that. But the game considers, anything 100% to be stuff that you keep while you play the Song of Time. I did 100% it, and working on doing that now for the 3D copy. But yeah, it was definitely different, and it still is. I mean, the Majora's Mask 3D is way easier. So I mean, it's a lot. You can get away with a lot more if you've never played it before. They're not going to see what we saw when we played that. But at the same time, it's still fundamentally the same.
Yeah, well, let's talk about those differences and how they made it a bit easier, because you still have that 3 day cycle. You still don't have enough time to finish the whole game, certainly when time is slowed down. But something you mentioned before we started the show is that when you slow down time, time moves slower compared to slowed down time in the N64 version.
Yes. Yeah, that you play the reverse Song of Time, which is not a song you typically learn. You just play it and you learn it. Scarecrow sometimes will hint at it or sort of, tell you, but at the same time you can just play it right off the bat as soon as you get the ocarina. But yeah, it's and I've timed it and I've compared the two from N64 to this, and it's considerably different. It's like, it's like, it counts down by seconds in this, and it was like, half seconds in the other one. I mean, it's a lot faster. I mean, I'd say maybe it's a good 1 or 2 second difference between each minute in the game. So it's in real life, and it's a big difference. I mean, I've played, I played through the first temple and then did some stuff in town, all this stuff before even completing day two, it's nuts. And besides that, I mean, the boss fights are a lot easier. I mean, you can kill Odowa with 2 jump slashes, and it takes 6 jump slashes in the original game. Anything like that. I mean, there's lots of being able to save anywhere, that's one thing, or not anywhere, but
Oh,
anytime
yeah,
you get to an owl statue,
yeah, and there's a ton more. It's not like you can't warp to every single one of them, but there are a ton of just like save points throughout the game.
Right. The owls, you can, like you said, you can warp to, but there's save point, new save spots that are non-owl, but they're like mid-dungeon or something, and you can save them, and it gives you the option where if you screw up, you can go back to there. Whereas in Majora's Mask, before this, it's a save state. You save, it makes you exit the game right then and there. You turn the game back on, and it's erased. So that save state is erased. So that is, so it's definitely not the same. But there, you can deposit your money. It's, I mean, you keep all the items that you collect, but you lose, like, you'll lose your arrows, you'll lose your Deku Nuts, but you still keep the slot for them. Of course, you keep the mask, things like that. But, there's more differences I found. I'm trying to even think off the top of my head.
To me, like, yeah, let's get into some of the other notable changes. To me, it seems like the magic meter depletes slower.
Yeah, especially with shooting the just the Magic Deku, like the mat from the Deku form, just shooting that, it defeats a lot slower. So
I noticed it a lot when I was doing the magic attack as a Zora swimming around, which is
yeah.
there's just something that they changed as well. When you're a Zora, you don't swim as fast unless you're using the magical attack, which I was a little disappointed about that, because as a Zora, it was really easy to zip around in the water. And now, like just like regular swimming without the magic attack isn't a whole lot different from just swimming on the surface as a human. some other differences. So like some of the animations, this was a really nice change. Some of the animations are shortened the second time you see them. Specifically, the one that comes to mind the quickest is the business scrub in Clock Town. So yeah, in the N64 version, every time you would go up to that flower, it would go through the whole animation of him flying down and all that. And
yeah,
now you just have to see it once, and then the other times you get abbreviated versions of it. So little things like that they use to kind of tighten up the experience are great. Any other changes come to mind?
There's definitely some, you know, some text, like text changes and things like that. I know what's comparing. And I'd played through, you know, I play through Majora's Mask at least once a year. You know, this game means a whole lot to me. I mean, I watch, you know, Inop on Twitch. You know, he's the world record holder for 100% and any percent, you know, speedrunning Majora's Mask. I've watched hundreds of his runs. You know, he's my favorite speedrunner. I subscribe to his channel. You know, I talk to him on Facebook a lot. You know, he's awesome. And he, you know, he's mastered that game. I mean, he's in the Guinness, you know, Book of World Records as sitting on my nightstand. You know, he's mastered the original game, you know, and you know, he's even talked to me about some of the changes and things like that. And you know, he does like the 3DS version, but you know, obviously the graphics have been changed. You know, the one thing we didn't mention, the Bomber's Notebook is a big difference. You know, the Bomber's Notebook, you know, didn't hold hardly anything in the original, and this is like quest log. You know, holds all these side quests and things like that. You know, with this version, you know, like all the different, you talk to someone in town, it puts the quest in the Bomber's Notebook. Didn't do that before. You know, so it's just a massive quest log.
And you don't have to do the hide and seek thing twice.
Correct. Yeah. So, like I said, the fishing is a little bit different. Like I said, I mean, I think you have two fishing holes instead of one.
Yep.
You know, so that's a big difference. So, which, and you know, that with the double, you know, double song of time. I mean, you know, you usually have to sort of rush fish before, but I mean, I spent like 2.5 days, you know, just fishing. And then, you know, when I didn't have anything major going on in the game, I just fished and fished and fished and fished, and then just turned back time, you know, still had everything I had. And that was really cool. You know, I like that, you know, double time, the double time from, you know, the reverse song of time and fishing makes a good combo.
Yep. And then doing that, that double song of time, allowing you to jump to a specific hour makes doing a lot of the side quests a lot easier.
Yeah.
And the one I'm thinking of specifically, and it reminds me of something that you mentioned earlier, is just doing the Couple's Mask side quest.
Yeah.
It allows you to jump to specific hours so you can talk to people in specific order. And the first couple of times that I tried to do that last little part at the canyon where you have to go through the guy's hideout, I didn't remember how to. Or what exactly the inside of that was like. So the first time I went through, I just barely missed it. And the second time, I really fucked up and I missed it by a lot, stopping the sun mask from going down the chute. And like a big dumb idiot, I forgot that I could save the game before I even attempted it and then just reset the game and start again. So each time that I missed it, I would reset time, go through everything again, go and talk to people at specific times rather than just using the easy exploit for the 3DS version and just saving before before the appropriate time where the hideout opens and just trying over and over again that way. So, I mean, using that particular, like, that save function can definitely help with that section to where you're under really strict time and you have to multitask between the two characters. It didn't even occur to me until I had already gotten the Couple's Mask, until I had already done it successfully. I was like, well, I didn't really need to reset every time. I could have just reset the game and gone from a save point.
Yeah.
But anyway, you also mentioned speedrunning and like 100% speedruns of this game. And that's one of the things that I love most about Majora's Mask is that it feeds my obsessive compulsion to multitask. And the game really lends itself really well to seeing how much you can fit into a one-day cycle as possible and managing the clock and managing your side quests and trying to get as much done as possible. And it really makes for great replay value. And that's why I've replayed this game so many times on the N64 is because I keep on trying to whittle down how many cycles I need in order to complete the game. I mean, I'm not going to end up in a world record book or anything like that. I'm not that good at it, but I really have a lot of fun trying to do as much as possible. And the new Bomber's Notebook really helps a lot with that as well, because it allows you to set alarms for certain times and does like some of your clock tracking for you for when you need to meet up with people and things like that for side questing.
Yeah, and like I said, and it's definitely fun. I mean, you know, the thing I like so much about watching Majora's Mask speedruns is even you know, the world record for any percent, which is as fast as possible, is you know, 1 hour and 27 minutes, and I think like 31 milliseconds, something like that. So, you know, or 31 seconds. So it's, you know, 1 hour 27 minutes. So that's a long run, you know. Whereas it's 18 yeah. minutes in Ocarina of Time. So, you know, so that's a big difference, you know. Whereas the 100%, you know, which is still by Anop, is 5 hours. It's like 5 hours and 13 minutes, I believe.
God, that is so damn quick for all the stuff you can do in this game.
Yeah, and that, you know, and this, you know, speedrunner BPB was pretty close. He had the 100%. They kind of bump it around a little bit, but I mean, Anop hasn't lost it in a long time. He's had it for, you know, maybe a year or two for that, and he's the any percent. I mean, no one even has a close time to his at the any percent. But, you know, even watching those runs, if you haven't, I would definitely recommend it. Watching 100%, just how he does everything, because I mean, there's not a whole lot of glitches you do in 100% run as compared to the any percent. But
right.
But on the topic of, you know, speed running, and as I mentioned, you know, I haven't done any of them, but have you looked at any of the glitches for this version of Majora's Mask 3D?
No, I haven't. Have people started uncovering them already?
Yeah, there's a decent amount. You know, I haven't looked into even how to do them, but there's right off the bat, there's a glitch where you can do there's infinite rupees. I think. I'm not sure when. I believe it's right after you get to Clock Town for the first time. And then there's a Fierce Deity Mask you can get, you know, anytime, anywhere. You can get the Fierce Deity Mask, like, nice. Right off the bat. And there's a few other ones. Like, you know, there's a lot of early warps, which that was the Owl Warp was a big glitch with the original version. But there's a lot of, like, you know, to, you know, Owl Warps to forbidden areas that you can't, not supposed to be able to access to early on, but a lot of the glitches from the original game transferred over as well. But I haven't, like I said, I haven't looked into it. There's, as far as I know, the ISG, the Infinite Sword glitch from Ocarina, and this I believe I read is in this game. But like I said, I haven't done any of them. I don't, you know, I probably don't. I might mess with them, you know, like I did on Ocarina of Time 3D. But I'm not gonna speed run the game or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not done with my first run through yet. I'm getting ready to stack to tackle the Stone Tower Temple, so I'm making really good progress. But you know, the first time, I'm not trying to cram too much, and I'm just kind of enjoying the experience all over again. So I got a few other things to say about Majora's Mask 3D. I think one of the things that some people complain about the game is that there's not very many dungeons, and I guess there's 4 technical dungeons with like actual boss fights, but the game has a really rich world to it, and each of like the different areas, like the game is divided up like a compass, each of the different areas before a dungeon kind of serves as a pre-dungeon to the point where it kind of feels like the dungeon is just an extension of that environment. So, like in the swamp, you have to do a lot in the swamp to get to the right place, and then in the palace, you have to do a little stealthy and a section in there, and then do a section where you're going through the Deku flowers to get to the back area. And there's just so much that goes on in the different sections, and they all have a lot of depth to it, that it really constructs a really vibrant, connected world. The only other Zelda game that really comes to mind when you're talking about having these exterior areas that also act kind of like dungeons is Skyward Sword. And in Skyward Sword, you have like the little pre-dungeon areas that you warp down to, where you have to do like some sort of adventuring or puzzle solving in order to access the dungeon. And if you compare like the sections in Majora's Mask and Skyward Sword to, say, a game like Ocarina of Time or Twilight Princess, those two games, the areas before a dungeon sometimes feel a lot like just a path to your next dungeon. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the way the game was designed. But I really like how in Majora's Mask, there are problems you have to solve and puzzles that you have to solve before you get to the dungeon. And it makes everything feel a lot more alive. It gives you a better connection to the world. It feels like there's more at stakes, because every area that you go to has somehow been messed up by Skull Kid in some way, and you can do something to rescue it. And a lot of the areas are pretty self-contained, but they do like little things to make all the areas feel like a part of a bigger world, mostly with small little side quests that connect them, like the Business Scrub side quest where you're trading the title deeds over and over again, or like the Frog side quest where you want to gather up all the frogs and then with the Don Garo mask and then talk to them in different areas. So there are ways that they connect these areas that are otherwise pretty isolated from each other. But as far as the actual dungeons go, they're all really fun. The Great Bay Temple isn't that hard, people. It's not that bad. And I think that was one of the complaints that I've read in a couple of reviews, that the Great Bay Temple is confusing. And Jody, I think we've actually talked about this on Miiverse before. It's not really that bad.
No, it's not at all, and especially not in this version. But I mean, it's not that bad. None of the dungeons are, honestly. I mean, it's you know, you feel pressure from the 3-day cycle, which causes a lot of people to stress and rush and mess up, and make mistakes. But you know, it's not that bad. You know, like you said, I mean, I don't have a complaint about the game. It's one of my favorite Zeldas of all time. You know, I'm very passionate about it. I mean, I campaigned for it. I was constantly like, you know, Majora's Mask 3D, you know, please. You know, the day I bought Ocarina of Time 3D, I mean, that's all I wanted. You know, I saved all the pictures of the, you know, the Majora's Mask, the 3DS and Wii U that were, you know, fan made pictures and things like that. So, you know, I kind of always had hype for it, so I'm glad that it's finally out and I'm playing it.
Yep. So, I lost my train of thought. Oh, you mentioned the day cycle adding pressure to the temple, and you actually mentioned earlier how having the slower time makes it so you're like leaving the dungeon with a lot of spare time. One of my main strategies when I had played Majora's Mask on the N64 was to get to the owl statue, basically in front of a dungeon, you know, mark it so you can soar there, reset time to save, and then warp right to the statue and start the dungeon so you have the full 3-day cycle.
Right.
I had been doing that in this version, but then when I was going through the first one, I was going through the swamp, I beat the dungeon, and I looked down at my clock and I realized like it's still the first day.
Yeah.
And there's other things you can do in the swamp after you've kind of healed the area. There's other things that open up and other little side quests and things. But I was like, wow, there is so much time in this version. You don't really have to do as much resetting, which is pretty cool. So my main advice, and the reason I brought up with the Great Bay Temple, is that in this version, the best way to tackle it, I think, is just to try not to tinker too much with it. Go through it. Try not to change the flow too many times.
Pay attention.
Yep. See how much you can do without changing the flow. Then try to change the flow. See how much you can do. And really, you should not have to flip back and forth hardly ever in order to beat the dungeon. But that, I guess that's my sort of non-spoiler hint for how to tackle that dungeon. But Yeah, Majora's Mask, also one of my favorite Zeldas, if not my favorite. There's so many really great moments in it, both serious and funny, like fighting the aliens at the ranch or getting the fierce deity mask, like hatching the little chickens, like marching around wearing that mask and having all the chickens grow up in front of you. Like setting the postman free on the final night by letting him deliver that package. Losing your sword to that bird in front of the Milk Road, who nets you a lot of rupees. That's a good way to farm rupees over and over again.
Yeah.
But you know, you do have to be a little bit careful, or he'll make off with your sword, which is really cheap to buy back.
Yeah, right. So yeah, it's like you said. I mean, it's definitely a very nostalgic experience as well. I mean, the game is good. You know, I have every copy of the game. You know, I have the gold copy on N64. You know, I have all the remakes. You know, I have it on Virtual Console for the Wii, mm-hmm. and you know, play it on Wii U, the GameCube copy, all that good stuff. So it's awesome. You know, I didn't get the collector's edition. You know, like only. I think six people in the world did, but I did get the cool standee from GameStop, which is sitting on the bookshelf behind me. It's like 2 feet tall, maybe, would you say? Yes. And it's a Skull Kid, you know, standing on a little pedestal, and it has the Zelda Majora's Mask 3D. It's pretty sweet. You know, it makes up for it. You know, it's got the world will meet with a terrible fate at the bottom, and it's got the big Majora's Mask, but it's just Skull Kid standing there. It's really cool. It's really neat, so I'm glad I have that.
And the one last point that I wanted to touch on before we close out the Majora's Mask discussion is that I'm playing on original 3DS XL, so I don't get the full camera controls, but I really like the gyro controls for aiming. The target shooting games on the N64, when your analog stick started to go, could sometimes be a pain, but man, with the gyro controls... I played each of the target shooting games 2 times, got 4 perfect scores and all of the collectibles that you need. And I even went back and played them a couple more times after that because it controlled so well, and it really made like that fine-tuned aiming so much easier than it had been before. You're playing on a new 3DS, yes?
Yes.
Are you exploiting a lot of the camera controls? Are you doing a lot of looking around?
Yes and no. You know, since we didn't have it to begin with, that function wasn't there. So by default, I'm not using it by default. But I went into zones where typically in the zones you walk in and the layout has never changed. And now you can change the layout of it. You know, you can do a complete 180 and look at the town backwards. You know what I mean? So like for like the North Clock Town, things like that. Of course, you could always change it, you know, in the game differently. But this, I mean, it's a little bit tighter with this. You know, you can, it's neat going through dungeons and things like that. It's really helped, you know, having the C stick on here. It makes a difference. The game, you know, loads considerably faster. The revamp 3D is really nice. I mean, it's like I've played most games with 3D on for the first 15 minutes and typically turn it on and off. But I mean, it's, you almost never want to turn it off because of how well it works on these new 3DSs, especially with Majora's, you know. And I popped in Ocarina of Time, but the 3D in Majora's Mask is so much better than the 3D in Ocarina of Time, and especially on this, and it just works really well. But I haven't, there's a lot more. I mean, they announced that we'll discover some new 3DS exclusive aspects, on this handheld, but I haven't seen too many other than the camera control so far.
Hmm. All right.
And the tighter gyro, the gyroscope control is supposed to be tighter, but I don't, that doesn't seem like a big deal, you know?
Hmm. So yeah, well, I guess we'll bring our Majora's Mask discussion to a close there. It's a really beautiful game. It really tries really bold new things. It'd be great if every game was as brave as Majora's Mask and messing with the structure and the formula. It was iterative to Ocarina of Time. They reuse a lot of the same assets because I guess they kind of had to be. A little bit bolder with the structure of the game because they were reusing so much because they were trying to get a game out faster. But I think that they should try that more often. Just kind of doing a new take on a formula using the same assets, because every time they do it, the really good things seem to happen. Because we got Majora's Mask that way, Mario Galaxy 2, Captain Toad. So when they do that kind of things, it seems like good things happen. So, have you played much of Kirby and the Rainbow Curse?
Yeah, I was actually playing it before we started here. So I'm just completed the third world. So I played a little bit of it. So it's really, really fun. Lots of really innovative level, gameplay level, the level design is really, really awesome. The boss fights are really fun. The way you have to use the drawing the rainbow and manipulating the course for Kirby and things like that. So it's a really fun game. It's a lot different than I thought it would be. I'm really enjoying it. So, and at times there's a little bit of difficulty with going through the level, especially with getting some of the side items, some of the figures and things like that.
You have, if you're trying to collect everything,
I'm trying to collect what I see. I'm not spending a whole lot of time doing 100%. I'll go back and do it, but there's one part of the level where you have half an inch of spikes and you have to navigate through it. For a side item, you have to draw quickly, because the level's moving. You have to draw a very precise straight line and then go up and then you can go keep going straight, and then if you hit one of the spikes, not only will it hurt Kirby, it'll stun him for a second, and then if the stage catches up to you, die and start all over. So that adds a little bit of an element of difficulty to the game, but it's fun. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm liking it so far too. I'm not that far. I'm a couple levels into the second world, and when you mentioned the boss fight, that first boss fight against the tree, who you're always is your first boss in Kirby game. God, that was a really nice fresh take on that boss fight. That was really good.
It's like, hey again, and then it's like, oh shit,
and this is totally different from how I've been fighting in the past. It's got a really nice art style to it. I find myself mostly playing on the game pad just because that's where you're doing all of your course drawing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I mean, it's like Scribble Knots. It's like for this game, I haven't touched multiplayer yet, so I wanna mess with that tomorrow. Hopefully, since we're snowed in, hopefully my work will be canceled tomorrow and I don't have to go in. But I do want to try the multiplayer, so I haven't. But yeah, the TV, kind of like with Scribble Knots, is there for people to watch you play. Since you do play on the gamepad, and for multiplayer, people that joins you, they'll play alongside you on the TV. But yeah. Like I said, it's mostly a gamepad game.
Yep, true. But it looks really nice. I really like the visual style to it, that claymation style. And I'm actually excited to try some multiplayer as well. I'm hoping to try that out tomorrow as well, because I could never get anyone to play Return to Dreamland with me. It seemed like it was really great. That's not true. That's not true. Yeah. Wes did play with me one or two times, and it was really fun.
Yeah, we played through that game. That was really good. Really, really good. So
yeah, I really enjoy the multiplayer aspect to those 2D side scroller games. So looking forward to trying that as well. But yeah, I can definitely recommend Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, even from just the first few levels. It's definitely a lot like Canvas Curse. So far it seems to be doing enough. I mean, with the boss fight, the first boss fight alone, it's already showing me that it's going to do enough different from Kirby Canvas Curse to definitely say, even if you played Canvas Curse to death, there's definitely something to get out of Rainbow Curse.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about Pokemon Shuffle. Are you playing it?
I haven't played it a whole lot, but it's really it's fun. It's a whole lot like the other one that came out, Pokemon
Battletrazze.
I have that as well. So it's really cool. I haven't done any microtransactions or anything like that, but it's fundamentally the same. It's a lot like Puzzles and Dragons. It's pretty cool. I like how you have the create a fire, a match of fire against a grass Pokemon does double the damage, things like that. It has your typical Pokemon elements in there, thrown in there, but it's fun.
Yeah, and I guess one of the main things I wanted to talk about Pokemon Shuffle is apparently there's, again, huge surprise, people on the internet who are mad about having Nintendo making a free-to-play game with microtransactions. And God, everyone on the internet who's mad about this just needs to take a huge breath and calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
It is not nearly as like predatory as I've seen like people talking about it, like with how they try to like get you to buy gems and coins and things like that in order to keep playing. It's a game that it does not overstay its welcome, because it can't, because you can only play five times before, you know, you have to let your time bar trickle back down to get another play out of it.
Right.
And in order to like buy more stuff, if you want to buy more gems or more turns or stuff, something like that, you have to go into the eShop to do it. Like you can go directly from the game to the eShop, but it's not like you're sitting there, you're in the middle of a match and you lose. Like, hey, you can keep going. All you have to do is buy a gem, and like it being like automatically like charging an account or a credit card right from there. There's enough of a delay between you like in the game and going to the eShop to where you can really think about like, well, do I really want to spend any money on this? And like I'm 40 or 50 stages into it, and I have spent no money on it, and I've played like for 10 minutes at a time, every several hours, sometimes once or twice a day, and it's fine. You know, it is a really by the numbers match 3 game with like those Pokemon elemental alignments to it, and also, you know, you can expand your roster. I guess I haven't played a whole lot of Puzzle and Dragons, but I guess that's the sort of thing about Puzzle and Dragons, is like you defeat the enemies and then you can recruit them. It's similar to that, where you know you catch the Pokemon, and how well you performed on that level is going to affect the rate at which you can catch them. And there's a sort of a collectible like Pokemon aspect to it too, to where sometimes for some reason, Togepi, the first time I played him, I wasn't able to get him, even though I was like an 80% catch rate. He popped right out. And I moved on and I played a few levels. But then as I go back to him, I was like, well, I don't have that Togepi. I don't really plan on using Togepi. So far, there is no like elemental advantage to using a normal type. But I don't have him, so I wanted to go back and get him. So I used one of my turns to go back and fight Togepi again. So it has got like that sort of like compulsive collection aspect of Pokemon, and the game is harmless. It's harmless fun that you can pick up, play for a few minutes, then the game doesn't allow you to play anymore. And you absolutely should not be spending money on this game. It's not necessary. I don't think it's an interesting or unique enough game to where anyone would be sitting down and wanting to play it for hours and hours. So this game is free, and it should remain free for the entire duration that it is on your 3DS or SD card memory. So the last brand new sort of game that I want, the last new release game that I wanted to at least mention really quick is Breath of Fire. Came out in the Virtual Console, and you've played this one before. Yes. I think we've talked about this one.
Yeah, I played it on Super Nintendo, and I played it on, online. I mean, I played on, you know, shame on me, an emulator, in the past. But yeah, like I said, I love the second one a lot more. But the first one's fun. Yeah, it's been a while since I played the first one, but I definitely played the second one.
Yeah, and the first one, that's really the general consensus, is that the second one's a much better game. But the first one, It's a little bit rudimentary, but it's also a really refined RPG experience. There's nothing super special about it, but it's just a really solid by the numbers RPG, like a JRPG turn taking battle system, all that good stuff. And it's available on the Virtual Console. It's $8. It's a lot better than some of the eShop RPGs that have been coming out recently. Not that games like Pure Solar and Citizens of Earth, it's not that those games are totally without merit. There's good things about those games, but they're a little bit rough around the edges, where Breath of Fire, it's a little bit vanilla, but it's very polished. So, should let's move on to some games that will be coming out in March and just spend a couple of minutes on each. If you're excited about any in particular, or you there's anything you want to mention about them, we'll break it down a little bit. First one coming out March 5th is Mario vs. Donkey Kong Tipping Stars. I guess that one's interesting because it's the first sort of cross-buy one. Jody, are you planning on getting that one?
Yeah, I've looked into it, you know, and I'm kind of hit or miss or off and on with those series, but this one, you know, from everything I've seen with it, with the whole Tipping Star aspect, adds a whole new element to gameplay. So I'm definitely, you know, especially with the cross-buy, I mean, I can't I'm not gonna lie and say that didn't encourage me more. But you know, it's something I'm probably gonna get for sure.
Yeah, and the whole tipping aspect, I mean, I think it's really cool to sort of encourage people who are good at creating these levels to go ahead and keep making more, because that just keeps your content coming, keeps giving you more and more stuff to play through. And I might mess around a little bit with the sort of level creation, but I've never really tinkered too much with the sort of level creation aspects of the Mario vs. Donkey Kong game, but Mario Maker, that's the one I'm really excited to start like some level creations on. But yeah, this one I'm definitely planning on giving it a shot as well, both on the Wii U and the 3DS, since I'll be able to get both versions. So yeah, that one's definitely one that is on my radar. The one I guess maybe the biggest release of March is Codename Steam. That one's coming out on the 13th. And you played through the demo, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What'd you think?
Loved it. Yeah, really good. Like I said, I mean, that and, you know, Mario Party are definitely two of the biggest. I'd probably say Mario Party a little bigger, but in terms of popularity.
Yeah, it's got all them amiibos.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, it was really fun. You know, really, you know, I love the atmosphere for it. It's got a really unique atmosphere, mm-hmm. and really fun. You know, I played it with a Circle Pad Pro attachment, which is to me was the preferred control method. So I'm really excited to play it on my new 3DS. And you know, the story's cool. The, you know, like I said, the combat, the aiming, you know, everything about it. It's really nice. Like, it's really interesting. I pre-ordered it, so I get the Majora's Mask pin. So I'm really excited for it.
Nice. One of the things I liked about the demo the most is how the classes of characters all felt very different. And that was one thing that I wasn't expecting just from the trailers, is how different everyone would play. But you definitely have these characters like John. He's kind of your artillery kind of character. He's a guy that I usually had more toward the back, and I would use him as that sort of gun support to do some really big damage, but didn't put him in the line of fire a whole lot. All these different characters have their different attributes and their different advantages in battle, and using them all together tactically will give you a really great advantage. One thing that I'm curious if it'll work better on the new 3DS XL is the sort of enemy turn. I had heard people complaining about how long it was taking, and I'd think to myself, like, oh, you know, they're exaggerating. It's probably not that bad, but it does take a decent amount of time for the enemy to complete their turns. It's especially when there's a lot of them on the field. There's you can be waiting a good 20, 30 seconds before you're able to move again.
Yeah, I'd be interested in seeing if that's something that, like, the demo would, being a demo, game would speed that up. If not, but like I said, I don't know. If that's something that's going to be in the game, I would think that would be there for both versions.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. But yeah, that's definitely one that is going to be a day one purchase for me. And then on the 20th, we got two games coming out, one on the Wii U and the other on the 3DS. Mario Party 10 and all its amiibos are coming out on the 20th. And it's going to have, you know, the traditional party modes with all the minigames and stuff, and then also amiibo-specific boards. Is there a particular mode that you're most excited to try out?
mini games and party mode. That's just, you know, Mario Party is a tradition for us. You know, we, you know, my family and friends, things like that. So that's a must. You know, I'm really excited for it, especially with the Bowser. You know, the whole the Bowser.
Oh yeah, the fifth person. Yeah.
Yeah, the fifth person playing, and that's going to be real interesting and seeing how that works. And you know, I have a lot of ideas how it'll play, but yeah, like I said, it's just the typical board game party style mode, all the mini games. I'm really hyped for it.
Yeah, and that's actually a really tempting aspect about the game, is to kind of have that fifth person as kind of a foil to everyone else. And it's probably not a game that I'm going to be getting right away, but I haven't had a Mario Party game. I played one. I think I played Mario Party 9 on the Wii back in the day. But it's one that I think would definitely be cool to have if I could get some people together to play. Again, probably not a day one purchase, but I think at some point I'll probably pick up Mario Party 10 for those party situations. Yeah. That would be a fun one. Any interest in Fossil Fighters?
No, I haven't looked into it too much. You know, I know that series has been around for a little bit, so it's you know, it looks a little interesting, but I haven't looked into it that much at all.
Neither have I. I mean, for my monster collecting, I'll stick with Pokemon.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are the big games coming out in March, and we've been going for over an hour and a half, so I think we should probably close it off there. But Jody, thanks for joining me on this sort of surprise show. Again, my usual co-host, I wasn't able to coordinate a time with him, so thanks for jumping in, as always.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude. We kind of skipped over the Super Nintendo show for the month of February. We are going to do it. I have a few games that I want to talk about on that show. For all your listeners out there, but we're probably going to record that in a few days. We might get it posted by the end of February, so we're kind of doing things out of order, but definitely in March we'll get back into a normal cycle of recording. So the next show we post will probably be the Super Nintendo show. If we don't get to it, then we'll just start back up with the Pokemon show at the beginning of March. So until then, everybody,